M. Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The Supreme Court rules against limiting access to a drug often used for abortion, mifepristone. CBS's Willie James Inman.
The justices ruled to allow a commonly used abortion pill to remain on the market while the case makes its way through the lower courts. Demonstrators against abortion rights were hoping for a different outcome.
Women don't deserve this. They don't deserve to take abortion and do it on their own. They deserve support.
The Supreme Court blocked the ruling from a federal judge in Texas, which said the Food and Drug Administration's approval of mifepristone was flawed and that the drug should be banned. The case can now continue in the Court of Appeals. During that time, there will be no change to women's access to the abortion pill.
With Earth Day tomorrow, President Biden spoke from the White House Rose Garden about an executive order aimed at helping address longstanding public health concerns from pollution. Mr. Biden is creating an Office of Environmental Justice.
Under this order, environmental justice will become the responsibility of every single federal agency. I mean, every single federal agency. That means every federal agency must take into account environmental and health impacts on communities.
LGBTQ groups in Florida are taking a second look at planned events after state lawmakers pass a bill they say targets drag shows. CBS's Peter King reports.
The bill bans minors from attending adult live performances, and while it doesn't specifically mention drag shows, LGBTQ activists say they've been targeted.
We've lost sponsorships.
Danielle Olivani is organizing Lake County, Florida's first Pride event, which she says is dependent on drag performers.
Thus causes us to have to find new performers, possibly a new venue.
The bill's author says it only targets sexually explicit events, but critics say that leaves a lot of wiggle room. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Prosecutors have formally dismissed involuntary manslaughter charges against Alec Baldwin in the 2021 shooting death of a cinematographer on the set of the Western film Rust. CBS's Steve Futterman.
The decision to dismiss the charges comes after prosecutors say new evidence has emerged and they can't go ahead with Alec Baldwin's case. That new evidence reportedly involves modifications made to the gun before the shooting occurred. The modifications may have made it easier for the gun to go off.
Two warring factions in Sudan are still engaged in a violent power struggle. U.S. State Department Deputy Spokesman Vedant Patel says that Americans in the capital of Khartoum should make their own safety arrangements.
Due to the uncertain security situation in Khartoum and the closure of the airport, it's currently not safe to undertake a U.S. government-coordinated evac.
People trapped in the capital are unable to reach the U.S. Embassy. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and maximum success with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. It's a new record low for unemployment in Wisconsin. The state's jobless rate fell to 2.5% last month. That's down from 2.7% in February. The Department of Workforce Development says only 76,000 people in Wisconsin are officially unemployed. The national jobless rate in March was 3.5%. Only seven other states spend less for each student than Wisconsin spends on its state universities. That's according to a new report by the nonpartisan Wisconsin Policy Forum. On the other hand, Wisconsin is in the top five when it comes to funding two-year colleges. Lawmakers working on the state budget will decide in a few weeks how much money to spend on Wisconsin's higher education systems. In sports, the Brewers host Boston tonight. Freddy Peralta starts for Milwaukee. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Ready for a journey to Flavortown? Head over to Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill. They've been serving up the best food in Wrigleyville for 8 years and counting. From their famous smoked chicken wings to their tempura battered cheese curds, every bite is a trip to flavor heaven. And with hospitality that's second to none, you'll feel right at home. So why wait until after the game? Rev up your taste buds and join them at Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill at 3478 North Clark Street in Chicago. Check out their menu on Facebook.
Paid for by U.S. Telecom. Closing the nation's digital divide is more important than ever. Broadband internet opens doors to education, jobs, and healthcare. America's broadband providers are making historic levels of investment, including $86 billion in 2021 alone, to bridge the divide. But millions of Americans, many in rural areas, still lack access to high-speed internet. New federal infrastructure investment will provide more than $42 billion to expand the nation's broadband connectivity. U.S. Telecom President and CEO Jonathan Spalter.
Broadband providers exist to connect communities to opportunity. We did this first through telephone lines and now high-speed internet. Working alongside our company's own investments, these once-in-a-generation federal funds can help achieve our shared goal of high-speed internet for all. State and local.
Download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Supreme Court. Shockingly, the Supreme Court. This is temporary, I think. Temporarily overturned. Stayed, actually, the Texas court ban of the abortion pill. They're going to, I guess, send it back down to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, where there might be a chance that it gets back before the Supreme Court, and they throw it out anyway. But for the moment, this medication will be available. It is not being banned by the Supreme Court. And I know the Trump judges are all upset. And I know the right-wing crazy folks all upset. I was expecting this from the court. We will see how, because this, as I understand, this happens. We're going to kick it back down to the lower court, let them make the decision, and then we'll see if we have to deal with it down the road. But for now, this is where it is. I have no faith in these six little authoritarians in robes. I'm making the right choice on this, but for the moment, still accessible, still legal. Now, what's interesting is since our six authoritarians in robes decided to, against what they said during their confirmation, overturn decided law, undid 50 years of decided law at the drop of a hat, what we're finding. And again, not surprising, but in the states that are going and banning abortion across the country and in red states, what they're finding is those states are having a really difficult time finding OBGYNs to come and do residency. In fact, the number, according to the Washington Post, these states have seen about a 10.5% drop in applications for people to be working these things. And again, this is going to make women's health much worse because these doctors don't just do abortions. In fact, most of them don't do any of them. But what this is doctors going, I don't want to get involved in the legal wranglings of deciding how to care for a patient. And this was a predictable consequence, and I think it's going to get worse the first time they do try a doctor and throw a doctor in jail for making a decision, which is going to happen. I think it gets much, much worse after that. So I just wanted to throw that out because that's kind of the big story of the day. The Supreme Court didn't do what some thought they would do. And this is one of these issues where what's amazing to me is you're talking about such a small percentage of the population that this affects. But everybody, you know, seems to be worked up and in their camps about it. And as I've said, I'm kind of in the middle of the road in that personally I'm against it. But policy-wise, I think it has to be legal. It has to be safe. I'm not pro-choice, nor am I anti-choice. I'm pro-safety. You know, as I've said, I've got two daughters. I want to make sure that they are safe, that they don't have to live like their grandmother's generation had to. That you're rushing to back alleys, that you're doing things that are going to be unhealthy, and quite frankly, could cost you your life. So for me, it's a much bigger discussion than just black or white. And especially when you start talking about all the other things that a bunch of old white guys know nothing about, I don't know that I want them making that choice. And if I were a woman, I don't think I would want that either. But I am curious your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Now, this is one of those things. Again, issues are complicated. Having conversations and discussions around how we as citizens do this thing called self-governance. This wonderful experiment of our country of citizens, you know, electing representatives to go and do the will of the people. It's interesting to see how we're not doing well at it. And it's because we're siloed up. You know, I've got my talking points, you've got your talking points, and we never had one of these moments. So I got an email today, and I do this occasionally, especially when someone says, I'm going to come get you. I'll be happy to talk with anybody. And so Matthew sent me an email saying that he wanted to chime in, that he couldn't find the phone number to call and all this. And, you know, called me a coward. And, okay, went into this whole, you know, he's going to challenge me and all this. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. Let's have a conversation, because I will talk with anyone. Because I think we have to talk to each other. We have to come back to the public square. We've got to hammer out ideas. Because I truly believe, and I've said this 1,000 times, I'll say it 1,000 more, I truly believe that we working people agree on much, much more than what we disagree on. That we agree on really a lot of the big stuff. And once we put aside the outrage candy that's being shoved down our throats, once we get away from the enormously well-funded outrage machine that's put in place to keep us in our silos and divided, that once we talk to each other, we figure out, you know what? You know, I'm actually learned something. I'm actually agree with you. I know, right? And this is one of those moments where, you know, we had this about 45-minute conversation that I'm going to put out on podcast. You know, so tomorrow it will be up and available 6 o'clock in the morning. But this is one of those things where we agreed on more than we disagreed. And all of one of us was surprised by that. And it wasn't me. Because I'm of the mindset that we can find common ground outside of the political sphere, what happens in Congress. Because again, they've got moneyed interests that they've got to bow to. And money is a big problem in our political system. Because there are things that, quite frankly, we can agree on. As I talk about all the time, my wheelhouse here, wages, hours, conditions. My wheelhouse is, how do we make workers' lives better? My wheelhouse is always, how do we help strengthen families and give them opportunities, keep a roof over their head and food on the table? How do we do that? How do we do it better? But we're always fed these other things. And the gun issue was part of it. And this is what got my retired master sergeant friend to reach out to me and have this conversation. And it's one of those moments where, and I want to do this. So if you're one of those folks who, I hate you and I want to talk to you more than anyone, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails and especially the crazy ones, because I think those are the people we can maybe have conversations with. And not always. I've run into some fives that are just so far off to the fringe, drank so much Kool-Aid that their eyes are colored. But I think most people are willing to discuss things once you tone it down. And as I said to him right from the beginning, this is not about me winning and you losing. This isn't a I win, you lose, you win, I lose scenario. This is how do we effectively come together and figure out the right course forward. And look, we're not supposed to figure this stuff out. The abortion issue is a perfect example. If you don't want to have an abortion, don't. Nobody's forcing you. We've never had a policy that says, I'm going to infringe on your right and make you do this. I would never stand for that. But on the other side, you don't get to infringe your rights on somebody else's. And this is what's happening. You've got a well-funded machine that's imposing their rights on everyone else. And you look at across the spectrum. What are they doing to make lives better? In state after state, in red state after red state, what are we seeing? They're going after transgender people. And I've said before, not my issue. Don't understand it. Probably never going to understand it. But at the end of the day, I believe in life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. You do what makes you happy. As long as your rights don't infringe on mine, we're good. And I think we've forgotten this. I think we've forgotten how to deal with each other, how to talk to each other. And the gun issue, which is, again, why he came to me. He, as well, doesn't like seeing children shot and killed. Who knew? He, as well, thought it's kind of outrageous that someone's going to fire a gun out to somebody turning around in their driveway. Or a kid rolling a ball into someone's yard. Or someone ringing a doorbell or knocking on a door. We agreed on that wholeheartedly. Interestingly enough, we agreed that there should be gun control. There's always these things that pop up. And this is why I come back to this moment where we do need to have conversations. And we do need to figure out how we're going to move forward as a nation and get things done. Because while all of these side things are happening, while all this division's going on, we're getting robbed blind. We are getting robbed blind. And the question is what are we going to do about it? Are we going to continue to hate each other, continue to tear into each other? Or are we going to say, look, you know, we need to do better. We need to elect people who are going to be better. We need to elect people who are going to stand up and fight for our ability to support our families. That's always been my, it's always been my true north. Want to hear yours? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Got a lot to get to today. Just so much stuff going on. Quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So this, again, is one of these moments where there are opportunities, and we should be taking them at every opportunity. Let's go to the phone lines. Got CJ in Wisconsin on line one. CJ, how we doing?
Good, Rick. Thanks for taking my call. I guess I am a conservative, social moderate, so conservative fiscally, social model, moderate socially. I think Lindsey Graham's right as a Republican. Until we define what our restrictions are and reach across the aisle, Republicans are going to be defined by the Democrats and the media, because really it's gone back to the states and it should be determined there. Or come up with, like Senator Graham wanted, maybe a national resolution. But I've evolved on this issue. It should be a personally, I believe it should be a woman's right to choose, but there should be restrictions, not up to the day before it's born.
Yeah, but whoa, CJ, let me stop you right there,
for
CJ.
Rape and incest, I believe.
Yeah, let me stop you here, CJ, because sure. you've hit on something that's really a pet peeve of mine. There are not situations that when my wife and I had our three kids, we didn't race to the hospital on the day on birthday. And the doctor look at us and go, hey, which way are you going with this? That doesn't happen. The only time late-term abortions happen is when the woman's life is in danger. So this idea that abortions on demand whenever through the gestation period is just false. There's always been a 20-week limit. It's always
Rick,
happened.
No.
Yes.
Senator Chuck Schumer, the Democrats brought it to the floor, voted with absolutely no restriction. So the mere fact that you say that is not true.
No,
this
look,
was
I
voted
look,
on
CJ.
By the Democrats with no restrictions. And so, you know, I believe there should be some. If you saw an ultrasound at 12 or 14 weeks, I think a person would beg to differ. Now, again, I think it should be a woman's right to choose. And it should be between her doctor. But there should be some, again, pill. The Republicans come together and define what restrictions they would compromise with. It's going to be an issue for them politically. But you brought up that the Republicans attacked transgender people. They did not. They believe in women and girls having the right not to have to compete against a biological man. Because even though a transgender biologically, they're still it's not even questionable.
Now, this is such a... See, here's the thing.
Rights of women.
Yeah, here's the thing,
girls.
CJ. Hold on. Here's the thing. Now, you're taking two separate issues on this. In Montana right now, you know, a transgender woman said that if you pass this bill outlawing gender-affirming care for minors, they're going to have blood on their hands, and they have silenced her completely. Gender-affirming care is much more than any of
That's a different issue than was just passed.
No, you said the Republicans aren't attacking transgender people. I'm telling you they are.
Well,
so you can't say in this situation I like it. In this situation I don't, CJ.
I discussed with the Congress just passed a ban on a biological man competing in sport against women, biological women and girls. That's a good thing. That's pro-women and pro-girl. And that's a separate issue, what you're bringing up. I would talk to you about that. But I'm talking about what was passed by the Republican Congress that's being promised to be vetoed by this president who is, I don't know what, the worst president ever in my life.
Yeah, so you're going to go with that. And this is where this breaks down, CJ, because you now want to go to this place of attacking the president. As a conservative, and you've said that you're a conservative, are you not
very
uncomfortable?
Much.
Hold on. Are you not uncomfortable with the federal government using this law as a bludgeon where this should be at the community level? Do you know how many transgender athletes are, let's say, in the state of Ohio? There are officially five. And do you know how many of those communities seem to have a problem with it? None. This is a situation where, again, we're looking for an outrage moment. We're looking to get people upset and angry and pitted against each other without even talking about what the issues are. And this is where my frustration is, CJ, and I appreciate the call. Thank you. This is where my frustration comes with all of this stuff. I am not arrogant enough to say that I know in every situation what we should be doing on this issue. Personally, in combative sports, I don't think transgender women should be competing. I don't. But this opens up a much bigger conversation around local rights, states' rights. What should schools do with this? This wasn't a big deal until now it's the end of humanity. And it becomes this arguing point that diverts us from everything else. And this is my frustration in these moments. Again, I hope we can come to some resolution on this. There are pathways forward, But using the federal government, as my conservatives used to be against, as a bludgeon, I'm struggling with that. I'm struggling with that a lot. But again, I appreciate the call, CJ. If you got thoughts, I want to hear it. Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. This is, again, I want to hear your thoughts on it. My thought is this, and I've never really delved too deeply into this. As someone who played football, as someone played sports all through my life, I'm a purist. I am. I'm someone who, you know, the way things have always been is how we have to do them. You throw that in with the knowledge of the transgender community that suicide rates are incredibly high, that, you know, depression and, you know, all kinds of things are really high in these communities. And if you had a child that, who knows, I don't know how I would handle it. But I do know I don't want the federal government telling me what I have to do or what I can't do. Again, I don't know what I would do. But I do know that the federal government is not the one in these private family matters that should be doing that. Now, I mean, we can get into a whole bunch of discussions about, you know, well, you know, I played basketball. I was only 6'3". I played against a guy who was 7 foot. Should he have been allowed to play? Because he was so much bigger and so much stronger than me. I don't think that's a problem, but some people do. We can't have a conversation on that issue without people, you know, yelling over each other. I don't know where we go. But you know what our elected leaders aren't doing? They're not debating this. They're not discussing it. They're imposing it. And you know who gets screwed over in all this? That kid that just wants to play sports. Now, do we create another entity? Do we create an intramural entity? Do we do... I don't know what the answer to that is. Because we're in a moment of change. And again, I'm not arrogant enough to think that I know everything, but I do know that I don't want people who are doing the things that I see our Republican friends doing. And you can't divorce the two things, the sports from the mere existence. You can't do it. And that's where a large bit of my frustration is in this. I've known people who have transitioned, and I've said this, you know, a bunch of times. And when they've come to me and said, hey, you know, Rick, I'm going through this. This is my name. You know, I tell them the same thing. I don't understand it. Probably never going to understand it. But I hope this is what makes you happy. I hope this is what gives you your life, liberty, and your pursuit of happiness. I hope this is that thing that makes you want to wake up in the morning and be happy. Again, I'm not going to understand it, but I don't have to. I don't have to be the one who has to wake up in your skin. That's you. And I'm going to do whatever I can do to help you, to lead your best life. I'm going to call you by whatever pronoun you want because it doesn't cost me anything. It doesn't matter to me. If you want me to call you something, I'll be happy to do it. If I forget and I make a mistake, a correction is okay. And I will try and do better. Why is that such a big deal? Why is that so hard? I want those kids to be able to have opportunities. Do I have a problem with Leah Thomas, you know, being so far out? Yeah, I do. But those are such minuscule moments. For me, I'm thinking about those kids who, with a suicide rate through the roof, how do we get them to be able to participate? That's my question. Instead of the hatred and the vitriol and the anger, the sheer anger, is there a way forward? And I seem to think there is, because there's so much more to this. Like I said earlier, you got out in Montana, they're going to pass a bill that says, you know, and the governor's going to sign it, no gender-affirming care for any minors, knowing that it's not all surgery. Sometimes it's medication, sometimes it's therapy, sometimes it's who knows what. I don't know. But what I do know is I know the people who are pushing this through, these are not people that I want pushing this kind of division. These folks have enough problems. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. And CJ, I do appreciate the call. Thanks so much. Got to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Have a good time.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
CBS News Special Report. The Supreme Court preserves access to the abortion drug mifepristone after a federal judge in Texas suspended FDA approval earlier this month. CBS's Jan Crawford.
The justices released this one paragraph, brief, unsigned order saying that they are pausing that lower court judge's ruling, which would have taken the drug off the market for abortion. They're pausing that while these appeals play out.
CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
This is not a surprising result because the Texas trial judge's decision to disallow the continued use of the abortion pill is under appeal, and the Supreme Court is merely holding everything in place rather than allowing a major disruption in the lives of women who have come to depend on the drug and on the drug manufacturer.
President Biden says that his administration will continue to defend the FDA's independent expert authority to review, approve, and regulate a wide range of prescription drugs. CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Plans for a Microsoft data center on land intended for Mount Pleasant's Foxconn site are moving forward. On Tuesday, the Racine County Board of Supervisors approved the deal for the land sale. It remains unclear how many people will be employed there once work is completed, but if it happens, this will be the first major development in the industrial park since Foxconn began work in 2018 on what was supposed to be an LCD manufacturing plant employing 13,000 people. That never happened. Foxconn currently employs about 1,000. The deal requires Microsoft begin the first phase no later than July of 2026. Wisconsin's statewide tornado drill has been reset for today. Sirens will activate in many counties across the state at 1:45 and 6:45 p.m. The drills are meant to familiarize you with what the sirens sound like so you know when to seek shelter during severe weather. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Ready for a journey to Flavortown? Head over to Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill. They've been serving up the best food in Wrigleyville for 8 years and counting. From their famous smoked chicken wings to their tempura battered cheese curds, every bite is a trip to flavor heaven. And with hospitality that's second to none, you'll feel right at home. So why wait until after the game? Rev up your taste buds and join them at Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill at 3478 North Clark Street in Chicago. Check out their menu on Facebook.
Hey, 420 friends, did you know Cheech and Chong was coming into town?
Nah, I'm just kidding.
Knucklehead CBD and Vapes are celebrating this 420 season just right. Whether you shop online at knuckleheads.shop, go into their store, or order online for in-store pickup, they are now offering their 420 discount, which is 25% off their delicious Delta 8 and 9 Galaxy edible gummies and their XL brand flower. So shop online at knuckleheads.shop today, or stop on into their Madison and Milwaukee locations.
550 State Street in Madison and 2949 North Oakland Avenue in Milwaukee.
Monday morning at 8, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday morning at 8 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
This is blatant class war by the privileged few against the many.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, a lot of interesting reports coming out around Donald Trump and, you know, the vision for a second term. And one of the stories I saw over at the Washington Post is, you know, they're more authoritarian vision of the future. And we've talked about what Trump wants to do with government employees and the F schedule, and you know, there's a story a couple of days ago and how he wants federal workers to have to pass a political test, which and I gotta wonder, you know, on that political test, does it have to come with a loyalty pledge? Is there gotta be an oath to say, I will honor dear leader? What does that mean? Because I tell you, I'm concerned about returning to the bad old days of patronage. I think in a lot of cases we're almost there, but I fear it gets much, much worse. And here to share some thoughts on all of this and, well, the looming potential of a government shutdown, debt default, all of that, I've asked my good friend Phil Glover to come talk with us. Phil is the National Vice President for AFGE District 3. Phil, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate it.
So, you know, this idea of patronage pops up, and a lot of people don't know what it is because we've been so far away from that kind of a system. But I hear Trump speak. I hear a lot of the right talking about we need people who are going to, you know, do our mission, and not the work of the people, but their work. And that kind of makes me worried.
Yeah, it kind of takes you back to the 1940s, I think, or before that. That's where apparently they want this government to go, where when they come into office, they can just get rid of all the civil servants and bring in people that think like them and talk like them and look like them, I guess.
Now, you know, I was looking at this story about a political test. And now there, you know, the argument was, you know, we need people who understand what due process is and equal protection and free speech. And, you know, they've got this viewpoint of what politics should be. You guys are kind of barred from political stuff as a whole. This seems to be, I don't know, all over the map.
Yeah, federal workers are already covered under a law called the Hatch Act that limits our political activities, especially any activities on duty, on government property, in our official capacities. And then even outside of that, we're restricted on different things. So that's already there. This idea seems to stem, as he was leaving office the last time, he tried to come up with this Schedule F, where there's classes of federal employees. And so he tried to move a bunch of people into what he called Schedule F, which would be all at-will workers. He could just wipe them out for any reason. No merit systems protections, no EEO protections, essentially, just simply, we want to get rid of these people for this reason. And he could have done that. And, you know, that really would have sent a chilling effect through the federal government.
And what does that mean for the average citizen? I mean, you know, look, I've said a number of times, I don't want a political bureaucracy. I don't want the person who works at the DMV or Social Security or the VA, you know, wearing their colors on their sleeves. I want them doing their job for we the people. I want a boring bureaucracy. I don't want a pendulum swinging back and forth every 4 or 8 years, filling, you know, those jobs with people who, one, don't know what the hell they're doing, and two, are there for all the wrong reasons.
Well, if you look at the agency heads that are selected and sent through the confirmation process, those are your political appointees. They get into the agencies and then they start to work on whatever the new administration's goals are. But they have to do it a certain way. There's federal rulemaking that occurs that takes time. You have to send that out to the public for comment. It comes back. You look at those things. The Office of Personnel Management and the Office of Management and Budget look at those things. And it is a slow process, but it's built that way for a reason, so that you don't have these sudden pendulum swings of, you know, one administration to another, changing everything in the way things work. Laws are made by Congress, enacted, and then rulemaking happens, and that's what puts those laws into place. So it takes time to change those things, and it should, it really should.
Yeah. Now, again, when you talk to the average person, they just want their government to work. And I've said before, I'm not for big government or small government, I'm for effective government. When I need something, we should get it. When we apply for Social Security, it shouldn't take months to get to. When a veteran needs benefits and needs to see a doctor, it shouldn't take months to get. We should be doing these things as a matter of course instead of a matter of politics. But sadly, it seems like this is what it all gets thrown into. And I brought up the VA. You know, this week it came out that the Republicans threw on the table a 22% cut to the Veterans Administration. They're already 50,000 workers short. They're already understaffed, overworked. This would only make it that much. I think I saw 81,000 workers would be lost if that were to actually happen. 81,000 and 30 million fewer veterans outpatient visits. That's completely outrageous.
Yeah, and that's not the only part of government that'll be affected by this. This obviously is part of this idea of a debt ceiling fix. The debt ceiling essentially pays. You have to raise the debt ceiling because the interest rates and the spending has already been spent. That isn't on new spending. That's on paying your bills for the old spending, and so it goes up. And it has for years, and under President Trump and under President Biden and Obama, it went up. And this is some idea to cut either $3.5 trillion or $4.5 trillion, depending on what you read, of current government spending, taking government spending back to 2022. Problem is there's more veterans needing care now. There are other priorities going on. Certainly law enforcement expands, all of these various things happen, and you have to pay those bills and you have to pay the employees to do it. So not even to say even inflation costs have gone up over the years since the pandemic. And that's been part of this increase as well. So to try to just draconianly cut across the board, all this funding, no hearings. Nobody's had a hearing. Nobody's talked about federal spending. Nobody's been called up the Hill to, you know, have a hearing in the House over how this would function. And this is what they do. This happens all the time with this. You know, it seems like, and I'm trying not to stereotype, but Republican Congress comes in and this is what they do. They put these across the board cuts and they don't look at agency by agency. They don't look at programming. It's just all government bad. Let's cut it. And they find out sooner or later, though, that their constituents don't feel the same way.
Right. But here's the thing. And they've run on for decades now that government can't do anything, shouldn't do anything, that all spending is waste, fraud, and abuse. So, you know, on the surface, it doesn't matter to them because they don't believe government should do anything. But you're right. When the constituents find out that it means them, you know, we put soldiers on a pedestal, you know, you're heroes, you know, all of this stuff. And then to say, well, we're not going to take care of you. When that rubber meets the road, do people really pay attention? Because you still got Republicans putting this out there.
It's the short memory, right? When the government shutdown hit under Trump in 2018, we had a 35-day government shutdown. By the end of that shutdown, people were starting to scream, both inside government and outside government. Because passports couldn't be get done. Various things that the public just relies upon couldn't get done. And so, you know, they go down to their office and it's closed. They go out to a national park and it's closed. And they start to get upset. But again, I mean, I hate to say it this way, but you seem to have a schizophrenic population. They don't remember very long on these kind of things.
No, the last time this happened was the Screwquester back in 2013, when Boehner and company held the country hostage and got across the board cuts 2%. I believe it was 2%, if I'm not mistaken, all across the board without, you know, asking what was being cut. And I make the argument that, you know, what happened in Benghazi had a lot to do with the fact that we were cutting funding across the board without going, hey, where's this funding coming from? Who's going to be harmed by it? This is my problem with these kind of, you know, we've got a hammer and everything looks like a nail.
And this is, again, this is kind of what they do each time. They promise their, you know, in their campaign that this is what they're going to, we're going to cut government spending. The problem is they don't identify it. Then they, when they get in, they don't have hearings. They don't bring people to the Hill to go through what it is we're actually doing. If there's some spending out there that they can find in certain agencies that is wasteful or, you know, not productive, then legislate that. But that's not what they're going to do here because it's too hard.
Yeah.
It's too hard to do that.
It's too hard to legislate, so it's easier to hold people hostage. And using this tool, which, you know, I've talked about this debt ceiling for a very long time, because every time it comes up, we have this, you know, and it seems to be Republicans more than Democrats using this as the ticking bomb, going, hey, we're willing to blow up the economy unless you give us what we want, which is, you know, more for rich people and less for working people. And it always seems to go their way on a certain level. So, you know, walk me through what a debt default would look like. What happens to the federal government workers? Again, do you guys get thrown out on the curb, or you're working without paychecks? You know, what does that look like?
Yeah, essentially, we go back to the same problem we had in 2018 with the debt ceiling. If they don't increase the debt ceiling to pay the current bills, then essentially everything starts to default. The appropriations process is done because obviously that's not going to move forward, and they're not going to be able to pay. It'll be similar to 2018 where they will order Bureau of Prisons employees into work without pay. They'll order TSA agents to work without pay, ICE agents, Border Patrol, you name it, the FBI. They will be told to come to work without pay. And that can only last for so long. And last time what happened, FAA, clearly the air traffic controllers, they were working with no pay, where they're essential workers or what they call essential workers. And when they got tired of it, then the shutdown stopped because they started grounding planes on the Eastern Seaboard.
Yeah.
You know.
And the thing that gets me is, you know, I look at the debt ceiling and it seems like an artificial construct that we don't need. You know, in my household, and I don't know about you, Phil, but before I spend any money, I make sure that I've allocated the resources to do it. I know I've spent it. I don't go back after I've spent it and go, you know what, I've decided I'm not going to pay for that. That's not how the real world works.
Yeah. Then take your family budget, because there's certain Republican congressmen that likes to use that phrase. All right. Well, I bought a car. It was on payments. And so I decide, well, you know what? I'm tired of paying for that car. I'm not going to pay for it. Well, they're going to come get it. And it's no different than the government. They've obligated this spending. You have retirement, you know, you have retirements they have to pay. You've got agency funding that has to be paid. You've got military contractors that have to be paid. All of these things that are obligated by the government have been already obligated. Yeah. You got to pay those payments. And again, they seem to think it's some sort of arbitrary thing. You know, the one I read, you know, one idea is to somehow prioritize. Well, we'll only pay these bills. Well, it still defaults the government.
And what does that look like? You know, because we haven't touched that. I've made right from the beginning, I said, I think right now we've got people in Congress who want to shoot the hostage. They want to push the button. They want to see what happens. They're the kid at the stove going, gee, I wonder if I put my hand on the hot stove, what happens? Do you think, like I do, that there are some who really want to push us into this? It's the way I'm seeing it.
I absolutely think there's some that believe that they could force this and get either a huge, huge, huge amount of spending cuts or default the government, see what happens. I think there's a core group in the, I guess, the Freedom Caucus that would love to see that. Or they think that, you know, President Biden will blink or the Senate will blink. But I think we all heard even Senate Minority Leader McConnell made the comment early on. It's up to McCarthy. Whatever he does, he does.
Yeah.
I don't think he's even going to intercede in it. And that's scary thing, because he at least usually understands how to run government.
No, and this is the fear, you know? The fear in this is, look, we're already struggling with high inflation. The economy is not great. It's moving in a better direction. Things are getting better. Jobs are being created. A default would be catastrophic. Every economist that I've talked to has said, you know, this would just be the worst thing at the worst time. And then there's part of me goes, that's exactly what Republicans want, so they can blame Biden.
Well, I think they think that. And, you know, if you recall back in the 90s when we had a default, or not a default, we had a shutdown, they thought, you know, Clinton would be blamed. When in the end, it was the House majority that was, they were the ones holding up any type of deal, any type of funding. And the president has a larger mouthpiece, obviously. He has a larger voice out on the world stage. So this House majority, which only has three or four member, you know, majority, does not have the megaphone that the White House has. And, you know, they found out in the 90s what happens. I think each time, no matter you're on the Democratic side or the Republican side, the White House has a larger voice. So you protest all you want.
Yeah, my fear in all this has just come down to a way for people in their silos to make more money, to get more campaign cash, to get more exposure. Hey, look at me. And we working people end up getting the short end of the stick every single time. But Phil, I appreciate the time and the thoughts. As always, good stuff, my friend.
No, it was good to see you again, Rick, and thanks a lot.
Our good friend Phil Glover. He is the National Vice President for AFGE District 3. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1920. That was the day remembered in Butte, Montana as Bloody Wednesday, or the Anaconda Road Massacre. Butte was in the heart of copper mining country. By the turn of the century, Butte's population was 25% Irish. The copper king of Montana was a man named Marcus Daly. He sat at the head of the Anaconda Mining Company. Workers simply called it the Company. Hailing himself from Ireland, the County Cavan, the copper king was known to prefer Irish workers. With the spread of electricity, copper wiring was in high demand. Then World War I grew demand even further, and the company was in the business of delivering that copper with little regard for workers' safety. This disregard resulted in tragedy. A fire in June of 1917 killed 168 workers at the Granite Copper Mine. Miners went out on strike demanding better safety. The company called in federal troops to return the workers to the mine. The industrial workers of the world arrived in Butte to help organize the miners. Unionization efforts were met with armed resistance from the company. Frank Little, an IWW organizer, was hanged from a railroad trestle. No one was held accountable. Finally, on April 19th, the workers had had enough. They went out on strike. 2 days later, hundreds of miners gathered in front of the Neversweet Mine on Anaconda Road. They were met by Pinkerton detectives hired by the company. The company gun thugs fired into the crowd of workers, shooting many in the back as they tried to flee. 16 workers were wounded and one man died. The strike collapsed a few weeks later. Today's Labor History in Two brought to you in memory of Carol Hillman, a passionate friend of workers and volunteer of the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's been interesting watching the Twitter debacle. And again, my favorite cartoon is there's a drawing of Elon Musk with a stick poking a dead bird going, come on, make money. And it's basically what he's done at this point. And you know, look, maybe down the road he's going to figure out how to get people to continue to pay the $8. But interestingly enough, NBC News is reporting that there had been 407,000 legacy verified accounts, of which we here at the show were one. When the purge happened, out of those 407,000, there were less than 20 that paid the $8 to keep their little blue check mark. And I said from the beginning, anyone who was creating content for Twitter should not pay for it because you've made it worthless. It is, as I said yesterday, it's the scarlet letter. It's now for people who only want to own the libs or whatever their rationale was. But when you look at the fact that as this Travis Brown, and he's a programmer, somebody that, people used to follow, he said there's only been a net increase of 28 of the legacy people, 28 people out of all of Twitter, of the legacy people who were of the 407,000 who signed up for the Twitter Blue. I don't know that that's really enough money to keep Twitter going. Maybe it is. But what I found interesting is there were a bunch of tweets going out from people who they're verified. And one guy in particular, Joey Meninero is his name. He tweeted out, this MF paid for Twitter. That's his thing. I didn't say it. He said, no, I didn't pay for Twitter. I paid for free speech. That's what he tweeted out. He tweeted out he paid for free speech. Let that sink in for a second. He paid for free speech. He also went on to say, I paid for 1776 to commence again. I paid for the founding fathers' vision. I paid to tell Silicon Valley off. I paid to show support for the man who put himself in the firing line of the First Amendment. I paid because we support our own. He paid because he thinks if George Washington were alive today, George would pay too. I doubt that. But I go back to this. What you've done is you've made this verification worthless. Because now what you've seen is a whole bunch of mock accounts, a whole bunch of Hillary Clinton got her blue check taken away. And now there's a bunch of Hillary Clintons out there with blue check marks. It's not her. It's not verified. But there's a bunch of people who put their name on it. And this is where you get into these moments. For instance, a group tweeted out with a blue check mark, a verified mark, this day in history, 1889, history's most lied about man was born. He lied because he dared to defy the global powers. He put his own people first. He loved his people more than any other statesman dared to love his people. To this day, war is waged against him. There's a picture of Adolf Hitler. And they're verified. The Auschwitz Memorial, they're not. So we're rewriting the history of World War II. We're rewriting the legacy of Hitler. And under a verified check. And the argument to the Auschwitz Memorial is, well, you should pay your $8. Then you could be verified too. And what? So you can be on the same level with the people who are spreading lies and misinformation? Seriously? The thing is, the reason I find this blue checkmark thing so interesting is it used to be a reward for people who drove content, for people who created content, for people who had followings. That's what it was. Twitter wasn't paying you to drive people to Twitter. Twitter wasn't paying you to get views and all of that stuff. They gave you this little check. And what it said was, is this person is of some note. I remember being in, perfect example, I was in Madison, Wisconsin, when the whole Scott Walker thing was going on. And there was a sign on the wall all over the place thanking CNN for telling everybody what was on Twitter, because CNN was following people on the ground, people that were notable, who were trustworthy, and they were reporting on them. They weren't on the ground. They were taking what was there. Now what we've done is we've taken what was a verification system, and we've thrown it completely on its end and made it completely worthless, which is why I've said I will not follow anyone who has a blue check. I will not retweet anything from anyone who has a blue check. I will not like anything from anyone who has a blue check, because you are participating in a system of disinformation. Because oddly enough, the number of these fake accounts who have verifications has gone through the roof, and it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. And this is part of my problem with this whole system. When you have one guy who put himself in the line of fire to decide how much free speech costs and what you're going to do with the algorithm for free speech. I mean, a lot of people think that you tweet something out and all your followers see it. No, not so much. It's what the algorithm decides and what they want people to see. That's the frightening part of this, to have someone like Musk or any billionaire or anybody.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.